Blog Talk Radio.
This is Arnold, and you're listening to Let's Chat. Now sit up and pay attention. Carlette is my friend. She's the best. Tune in on Wednesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Just do it.
You're listening to Let's Chat, hosted by Carlette Norwood, right here, Wednesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So sit back, relax, and let's chat.
This is the last go. Yes, it is now. This is the last rose.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Let's Chat. Today is May 6th, and I'm saying welcome back to myself because it's been so long. We've been on hiatus since December, taking a break, but we're back, and I'm so glad to be back with you. I want to give a big shout out to William Price King, who crooned my brand new opening. What a great guy he is. You can follow him on Twitter, William Price King. I want to give him a big thank you. Also to the show sponsors, Bleeding Critic, he's back with me, and so glad to have him around. And of course, Paul Sampson, Paul Sampson Films and Knight of the Templar. Big shout out to him too, my show sponsor. Whew, gosh, where do we even start? Since we were together last, there's been so much going on, and it's going to take us a while to catch up, but I just want to let you know I'm back and back in action with the Carmen Radio Group Network, along with Sherry Andrea and Nikki Michelle. You can catch them on Thursdays and Fridays. Be sure to do that. Support women in broadcasting. In the meantime, we're going to talk about things that have been going on in the country, and there's been a lot of crazy stuff going on. I've invited my old friend Steve Grumbine to come back with me tonight. You all remember Steve. He's been a guest on the show for a couple of times, and things have been changing with him, too. I'm sure he's going to catch us up on all of that, but he is probably going to come from a little bit of a different standpoint than he did when he was here last, and this is the first time that we've had a public conversation since he made that major switch. But come on in, Steve, and say hello first before we get started.
Hey, thanks for the intro, Carlette.
So how have you been, my friend? It's been a while.
It has been a while. You know, the last time you talked to me, I think I was in the middle phases of a leftward shift. It's been probably going on now since 2008, 2009 time frame. Many people have known that I was very, very much a right-wing guy, very, very strong conservative socially and fiscally. And over the course of the last 6, maybe 7 years, I've made a severe and sharp turn to the left, and now my joke is I think I'm left of Gandhi. So a lot has changed for sure.
Well, you know, so, I want to dwell on that for a second because you and I don't even remember how we met. Probably through a friend of a friend, probably on Facebook. And I've always liked you. I mean, you're a nice person, and even when we were, you know, on opposite ends of social issues, we always had common ground, and I think really that's how it's supposed to be, you know, that you take a little bit from each side and kind of mix it together and find yourself somewhere in the middle. So there was always this relationship that we were able to foster, even though some of the things that we didn't agree on. However, some of the right-wing friends that you had and the comments that they made were so disparaging and upsetting, you know, that was the kind of thing that caused a lot of tension and a lot of friction. So I'm just wondering, was it like, you know, a cathartic moment when the heavens opened up and this light beam came down and you saw the light, or what exactly happened that you made this significant change? I mean, people don't just wake up one morning and change. So what happened?
Well, I think that some of the things that are going on in our world today, I got to see from a slightly different angle. You know, I'm very well educated. I have a Master of Science
yeah.
from University of Maryland, University College, and I have an MBA from there as well. I have a very, very nice resume. I spent a long time at Verizon. I've been at Comcast. I've done some consulting work at various places. So on paper, I look like an instant success. There's very little that I don't think I could do. However, when the market crashed in 2009, I lost my job at Verizon. And that kind of kick-started a whole lot of introspection. I went through a divorce. I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. All that thinking of I have the world by the balls, that whole right wing, everything's going good, personal responsibility, hey, if you'd only made better decisions, all that nonsensical Calvinistic bullshit, you know, it was just in my brain. That was just what we were taught. You know, if you work hard, you do good, keep your nose clean, be respectful, everything's going to work out just fine. And that's not true. It's simply a lie.
You can do everything right. And coming from a white male perspective, that I imagine that was a slap in the face. I mean, you were, and I'm sure some of those people that believed that still believe that with you. Did you hear a lot of pick yourself up by your bootstraps? And because I know what the job market is like. You and I have had private conversations about that. So, I mean, do you hear people, there's something that you're not doing right?
Oh, absolutely. I had people telling me I should leave my children, move back to the D.C. area, or move away and find work, because work is, if you're not making money, what value do you have? People on the right equate value to income. They don't equate value to priorities in terms of family and things like that, unless it's their family. Everything has become
very selfish.
But
what amazes me about that, I want to stick on that for a second. What amazes me about that is this isn't coming from rich people, though. This is coming from our peers who are just basically as broke as we are. When I say broke, I mean they aren't in the 1%. They aren't even, you know, they're living basically paycheck to paycheck, too. But these are the people who have these ideas because they're on the right.
Well, they've been duped
into
believing
that's true?
Yeah, they've been duped into believing they're one business decision away from being a millionaire. They've been duped into believing that if they just keep plugging away, that everything's going to be all right. And by maintaining that illusion, they can always look down their nose at someone else. They can always have a slightly higher opinion of themselves, which allows them always to be one step above the pig shit they really are in. So at the end of the day, this all ties in very neatly to the topic that you brought on, and that is about race relations, police brutality. I'm going to throw another term in there, classism, and just the overall riots, you know, with Freddie Gray. And one of the reasons why I was so excited about taking this call is that when you look at the course of my life and you think about, you know, I have the privilege of both being in a country where the majority of the newscasters are white, the admissions people at the colleges are typically white, the bosses are oftentimes white, the newscasters, everybody is white. When I read the book, the textbooks, it's white-splained. It's explaining history through the lens of the victors, so to speak. Everything is jingoistic, flag-waving, gun-toting, hip, hip, hooray, USA. And very little of it is talking about the Emmett Tills of the world. Very little of it is talking about Strange Fruit and the hangings and lynchings that took place. And they didn't take place back in slave days. We're talking about, you know, in the 1900s and in the middle of the century, as we had Jim Crow laws and segregation. And there are still people living that today. The train has been moving fast and hard on the back of free labor for 200 years. Now those people got a running head start, and they're looking back and yelling at people saying, hey, what about your personal responsibility? And people haven't caught up. A lot of people haven't caught up. There's some white people haven't caught up. But there's an awful lot of black people that are still trapped in generational poverty. And what has happened, unfortunately, is you've got a police force, you've got an overall U.S. mindset that is based in Calvinism, that you deserve what you get. You deserve the good. The rich people deserve to be rich because they did the right things, damn it. Everything they did was right. That's why they're rich. And you poor people over there, the reason you're poor is because you deserve it. It's all about poor shaming. Yeah. You look, when you see people talk about food stamps and you see people talk about government programs and government assistance, what you hear the people like myself who consider it a French drain for fraud. In other words, we don't give a crap. Because the fraud is so negligible, because we respect that most people want to work. Most people
that's
want
true.
To do by their families.
And also, let me add in there, too, that's a very valid point when you say most people want to work, because, you know, I want to dispel any notions about people on welfare, because most people are not lifetime welfare recipients, which is what a lot of conservative people want you to believe. Most people jump on welfare for help in between transitional periods in their life, and they jump back off. And those people who are generational welfare recipients are that's a very small percentage of the people who are receiving food stamps and welfare receipts. So I just wanted to add that in there, too.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that for a second, because this is going to really keep leading back to our main topic. And the fact of the matter is that when you look at the Welfare Reform Act of 1990, I think it was called Personal Responsibility, ironically, under Clinton, they put a five-year lifetime max on welfare. So people are not living on welfare. This is not a dependency. That is a loser's approach. That is a bigot's approach. That is a poor shamer's approach. So whenever you hear someone say that, raise an eyebrow at them and know who you're talking to. You're not talking to someone that is very intelligent. You're talking about a judgmental, Calvinistic person that is part of the problem of why we can't have nice things in this country.
Well, you know, I think I'm a true Karl Marx. I'm a Marxist at heart, and because I do believe in the social conflict theory, and I do believe that we are in the throes of what he predicted, in that, you know, the proletarians and the elite are eventually going to eventually clash, because the proletarians are going to realize that they aren't going to ever get to where the elites are by working. And we're continuing to make the elites richer, while realistically we are still getting poorer and poorer. So, you know, I teach sociology, and one of the things that we spend time on when we talk about Karl Marx and the social conflict theory is false consciousness. And false consciousness is the, and I'm just reading the absolute definition now, is the ideological and institutional processes in capitalist society that misleads members of the proletariat. It's where people blame the individual instead of the flaws of society for where people end up where they are today, social conflict. So let's talk about that for a second. Will we ever, and we're going to build up to where we are in Baltimore. We're just taking the long road to get there. But do you see an increase in the social conflict, the class conflict, which started probably to become in the mainstream, where people became more aware of it around the Occupy movement? That movement, if it had leadership and direction, the momentum was there, and we were on course to make significant changes in this country based on the Wall Street or Occupy movement. I see another movement developing. People are tired, Steve. They're broke. They don't have a job. The cost of living is outrageous, and we're starting to feel like puppets. You know, there's somebody pulling our string, making us move. We aren't living anymore. We're surviving, and that, there's a big difference. So are we at the beginnings? Are we at the throes of a revolution? Was Karl Marx right? Capitalism is a clusterfuck, and eventually it's going to implode on itself. I know I said a lot, but I want you to address whatever part of that you want.
Sure. Well, here we talk about this, you know, as you know, I lead Grumbine's Political Mosh Pit, and that's a Facebook group that has been recognized in the Examiner as one of the best Facebook or one of best debate groups on Facebook. We monitor it 24/7. I have 33 admins in there that help me out every single day, round the clock.
Wow, that's
and
a lot.
We've grown to almost 2,000 members. Now, last time I was with you, I think we maybe had 500 or 600. But one of the things that is beautiful about being involved and having a group that bears your name is the fact that I have to learn a lot of stuff. I have to hear a lot of stuff. And I have to digest and consider a lot of different angles, because I don't want it to just be a left-wing group or a right-wing group or a, you know, some, you know, independent group. I want it to be a representation of the entire electorate. I want us to be able to go in there. I want us to be able to talk about things and really hash them out. And some days are better than others. But one of the things that I have found is that capitalism, especially the way it is today, they allow us to have just enough people feeling just comfortable enough that they won't revolt, but just desperate enough that they will always be striving. So what's happened here is that our baby boomer generation was able to get pensions. They were able to get retirement. They were able to stay with the one company for their entire lives. And many of them were able to go into retirement in their 60s, early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. I am not going to be one of those guys. For some of that is my own doing. Some of that, you know, but a lot of that has to do with the simple fact that we have privatized everything. We have made so much of our country a tough it up, just deal with it, suck it up, buttercup. There's no compassion. There's no social contract anymore. We've assuaged the social contract with a personal, selfish, Ayn Rand. Libertarian-styled, me, kind of childish approach to life. We're worried about our guns. We want to make sure we have as many guns as we can have, but we could give a crap if the brown kid down the street gets killed. We are very, very focused on keeping what we make. We're not very interested in making sure everybody makes it, because if everybody made it, then we wouldn't have any worries, but it fuels our need to be just one step above the pig slop. So what you've got is a system that is bred to keep us just docile enough, watching sports shows, watching stupid reality TV, you know, reading silly stuff about the stars, worrying about who got the latest Botox or the butt injections or, you know, what, you know, who's dating who. We've dumbed ourselves down to a point where unless it impacts us directly, that's somebody else's problem.
And that is so true. That is so profound what you just said.
It goes back, honestly, it goes back to the Reagan era, unfortunately. It probably goes back even before that. But let's just say truly the Reagan Revolution really did us in. It felt good for about 15 minutes to go grab all you can, to start deregulating, slashing taxes, doing all these different things to free the spirit. But what we did was we broke the social contract. Because even Republicans back then were cloth coat. Even Republicans back then understood that taking care of society, the great society, we're talking about World War II, people cared about each other. There were still issues. Mm-hmm. There was lots of issues. We've made tremendous strides in some cases. And in a lot of other cases, it's almost like we regressed. But getting rid of the unions destroyed wage growth. Our wages have stagnated for years and years and years.
Yeah.
All right,
corporations... I want you to stop right there for a second. I want
you
to hold on for a second. I want to say hello to everybody in the chat room and thank everyone for listening to Let's Chat. This is our launch show. I've been on hiatus since December, and I'm back. I can't believe it. And what makes today this extra special, May 2nd, last Saturday, May 2nd, marked the third anniversary for Let's Chat. I can't believe it's been 3 years. Some of you have been with me since the very beginning, and some of you are new listeners, but I want to thank you nonetheless for hanging in. You're listening to me and Steve Grumbine tonight. He is a friend of mine. We've been around the barn a couple times. He's been a guest on my show a couple of times, and we're talking about how he made the transition from the right side to the left side, and we're working our way up to the Baltimore riots. So if you want to give us a call, please do so. The phone number is 347-215-7302. That's 347-215-7302. There is a call on hold. I'm going to tell you, Steve, you know, I left Blog Talk and then I went to Mixler and now I'm back on Blog Talk, and I'm not even going to get into that. But while I was gone, they have changed everything, and I'm struggling to, I haven't been on the bicycle in a while, so I'm back on trying to learn how to pedal. So I don't know if that person has their hand up or not, but I'm going to answer the call, and if you don't want to say anything, that's fine. I'll put you back on hold, but let me see if someone wants to join the conversation. Good evening. Welcome to Let's Chat. You're on the air. Okay. I don't think they wanted to say anything, so I'm going to put them right back on hold. All right, Steve, let's pick up where we left off. So are white people scared? Is that what this is all about?
No, I don't think so at all. I think you've got two things at play here. I think, number one, you've got a large contingent of people, like I said, who have bought into this Calvinistic belief system that you deserve the bad things that happen to you. I think there is a whole lot of belief that the police, let's go with the police, for example. I think you've got two things going on. You've got the police who are taught to believe, in my opinion, that, you know, poor people are inherently criminals. They're basically the criminals of the world, and to always have a skeptical eye, and that they're basically used to fund the police stations, in my opinion. Look at Ferguson, you look at Baltimore, these places, ticket. They're constantly chasing penny ante infractions, if you even want to call them infractions, that are really, I don't know if you ever watched the show The Wire, but they talked about how the corners used to be a place for these people to meet, and they would gather and they would talk. And then the police stopped caring about the people. They stopped being a part of their community, and they started busting the people off the corner. And then it became something else. Now, mind you, there is crime. There's a lot of crime. There's an entire economic system that had to come about as a result of not having real jobs, as a result of letting people fall to the wayside. People are forgotten about. Their families. I mean, how do you teach someone better when you don't know better? When you have generation after generation just trying to survive. Now, I don't know about you, but when I work a 60-hour work week doing the one job that I do, God help me if I had to come home and do some Common Core math with my child. God help me if I had to do some science and some compound elements or something like that. I wouldn't have the time or the energy to deal with that. Now, you get somebody else who has to work a nighttime shift as a waitress, who has to let her kids be a latchkey kid and come home in an environment where everybody is kind of running loose because parents are either in jail from a failed drug war, for a stupid failed drug war. They're just working jobs that they can get because there are very few jobs as it is, especially if you don't have a degree or you don't have let's say you even have a record. Let's say you got caught up and pinched in the drug wars. It's hard to get a regular job. So you're out there working whenever you can, third shift, second shift. Your kids are home. You're not able to be there with them. Kids are running loose. Kids are doing their own thing. And they're in an environment with a bunch of other kids that are in the same situation. And these kids aren't worrying about, hey, who won the war of who won the Korean War? They're worried about how they're going to survive from getting home from school to their house and then waking up the next morning and going back to school. And
I want to go back to what you said, though, because when I ask you, are white people scared, you were really quick to say no. But I want to talk about that for a second, because when there's a paradigm shift, or when, power shifts, or there's a threat of power shifting hands, doesn't that cause panic?
I think there is an unease at the prospect of white people not being in power, for sure. When you say fear, I want to make sure we're talking. I don't think they're afraid of the black guy, although
You're right to clarify that. I didn't mean afraid of, walking down the street. I didn't mean that.
I think there's a fear of being a minority suddenly, of losing power, of suddenly, because they don't want to have to consider other cultures. A lot of these people are really trapped and steeped in their own little worlds, their little bubble, and anything that doesn't fit that paradigm is bad. It's bad. I mean, look at the way they treat homosexuals. Look at the disgusting things these people do to homosexuals. Look at, I mean, people are celebrating Ben Carson, and Ben Carson is out there absolute bigot. Ben Carson is a poor shamer. He's a, I like to call Ben Carson, Ben, let me pull the ladder up behind me, Carson. This is a guy who benefited from social programs, but is going out there and trying to run for president by repealing them, by pulling them back, by cutting them and slashing them. And what
I
they
can't
do is
believe
they,
Ben Carson. I mean, really, you brought his name up. God, that's one person that I don't even want to think about. What a, I mean, I'm shocked at him. Absolutely shocked. You know, amongst my friends, I would call him a coon because, you know, how he's up there with the Clarence Thomases of the world. How out of touch and self-loathing that man carries around with him every day.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was talking to some friends last night, and they know Ben Carson, and he's such a nice guy. And ironically, they're white. I don't know any
of
black
course.
People that are like saying, yes, Ben has got my back. He is really looking out for us. He's really, you know, he focuses, and this we really do have to bring it back, but these things are so important. They're so integral in what people think and why these riots and why the perspectives of these people are so skewed. Because of things like this where basically his entire approach is, hey, if you don't want to work, you're on your own. Well, whoever said anybody didn't want to work? See, these are the false
right.
narratives these people plant. They place this stuff out there. Yeah, what about all the welfare fraud? What about all the food stamp fraud? What about the thieves? They're out there getting cigarettes. They're buying lobster tail with their food stamps. I saw somebody in nice new shoes driving away in a BMW with a food stamp card. These people are so focused on the little guy beneath them that they can't see the big guy above them raping us. They can't get
right.
it out of their head because these people, us poor folk, us regular folk, we don't have a crack team of lawyers at our disposal. We don't have lobbyists fighting for us. We don't have anything. So we're easy targets. So it's easy for the big people above us to spin us all up, get us hating each other, hating our neighbor, worrying about our neighbor. Oh my God, he you know what he's getting over, okay? And
right.
this all fuels that whole mindset. Because let's be fair, African Americans typically vote in a very large block. I think it's somewhere over 90% vote Democrat. And
mm-hmm.
there's a reason for that, because the Republicans are batshit crazy. The Republicans have no interest whatsoever in helping anyone but themselves. So
mm-hmm.
peeling it back just for a second, and the Republicans are trying to privatize everything from our national parks to our Social Security to
mm-hmm.
you name it, everything. They want to privatize
mm-hmm.
it. Now think about this for a minute. When you don't have a family with money, when you don't have a family that knows how to invest, when you don't have a family that has wealth, I'm not just talking about a good job, I'm talking about wealth, to take that
right.
wealth and exponentially grow it and pass it on. When you don't have that, asking for them to privatize this stuff means you're going in there blind. And you have no way of taking care of yourself. The ebbs and flows of the market will be completely lost on you. So imagine all these people in Baltimore, these folks that are working three jobs at night, don't have time to take care of their kids. All of a sudden, you strip away all the protections and you privatize it. You strip away all the programs and you privatize them. You rely on charity. These people don't have time. They don't have time. And they're getting screwed. And this is a whole goal of Republicans. This is the whole goal of the right wing, is to privatize, because they've demonized, they've stripped government of all its power. They defund it. They cut it. They badger it. They badmouth it. They lie about it. They lied and said that Obama was trying to let Ebola into the country to pay white man back for slavery. These people are sick. They are the sickest of the sick. They are the sickest of the sick. There is nothing closer to a fascist like them. It's sick. Go on. I'm sorry.
No. I'm Eric Hammond. The president's responsible.
Oh, I got a million of them. I could talk for hours about that.
Now they're trying to blame Obama for 9/11. They're trying to blame him for 9/11, too.
There's still some people in Louisiana that blame him for Katrina, just so you know. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I saw that in my feed, too. Let's talk about here for a second Baltimore.
Sure.
Gosh, where to even start? This has been this has been building for a very long time, very, very long time. It would seem that black men, their lives are not valuable in the eyes of certain demographics. And because I'm not going to just say white people. I mean, a lot of other races that clash. And so I'm just going to make that a blanket statement. So, but it seems as though we're witnessing over and over police shooting people, literally slaughtering people. And if they're a criminal or if there's suspect behavior, there are certain people who are validating the actions of the police. If you are selling cigarettes on the corner, then that makes you the police are becoming the judge, juries, and executioners all within a matter of a few seconds. This is a problem, okay? This is a really, really big problem. What do we do to stop this? Because if we take on the police, it's going to be a big problem. We've seen that the National Guard gets involved. Can we turn this around? What exactly is the problem? It's not that this just happened, and I want to make this clear. This stuff didn't just start happening. And I also want to add that it's not just black men. Black women are being killed, too. They just don't make the news, as well as people of other colors, too. I just want to add that in, too, other races, rather, excuse me. So it's just that we have more access to cameras, you know, cell phones, and you know, technology has enabled us to be able to capture these moments. But this has been going on forever. Are the police out of control? What are we dealing with here?
Well, we've got a gun culture in this country. We've got a culture of protecting oneself. We have constitutional rights, the Second Amendment, hotly contested. The Heller verdict came back and has given new life to everybody sporting a weapon. I don't have any problem with guns particularly. It is what it is. I mean, I support the Constitution, but I do have a problem with the culture, the ammosexual culture, this whole concept of guns before lives. These people value being prepared more than they value helping one another. They value shoving a gun in your face more than they value actually helping feed somebody. They are mono-focused. You talk about guns, you can't even say anything about them whatsoever. These people are up and ready to go. And that whole mindset plays into this whole idea of you know, everybody's violent, right? There's just scary people out there. We got to really protect ourselves. And I think that coupled with people saying, hey, we got to be tough on crime, coupled with the fact that you see people walking around with their hoods on, their pants hanging down, people acting disrespectful, people acting certain way.
Okay, but wait a minute. Why is it okay? Why is it okay? Because I agree with you about the gun culture, but why is it okay for young white males to walk into a Kroger's with assault weapons? I mean, I know that it's an open carry state, but they're carrying assault rifles, they're walking around with guns, but a black man pulls out a cell phone and he's gunned out.
Well,
a man running away from the police is shot in the back 8 times.
And then a taser dropped next to him to frame him too.
Exactly. A young man who, you know, his spine is broken, his neck is broken. And these white kids are walking around basically doing whatever the hell they want to do. And I'm not saying that white people are not getting, you know, brutalized by the police either.
Yeah.
They are.
Let's do a couple things. Let's break this into a couple points because I don't want to – I think that you can over-focus on race to the point where you end up missing the big picture. And I think you can also under-focus on it and miss the fact that there's a definite systemic racism in our country. Police have gotten militarized. They are sporting this truly lethal weapons. We're talking about like stuff that they could go into Desert Storm and fight a real war. We're not talking about, you know, your old revolver with a baton. They're walking the beat. They're talking to people, drinking a cup of coffee. We're talking about people with armor-piercing weapons. We're talking about armor trucks, armor, you know, military-grade weapons, and the attitude that goes with that. And what I see, I asked some people, both in the pit and as I was going through, just asking people point blank. So, I'm going to have this call tonight. What are some of the things that are on your mind about? And to a fault, every one of them said that the police are out of control, that they have an alpha, just a abuse of authority, just a sense of cocksuredness, and overactive amygdala, alpha types. And they just don't care about the people that they're arresting. And the goal of the police is supposed to be bring them into custody and let them have their day in court. Let them have their day. I'm not saying they're good people. I mean, these people are probably bad people. They're probably doing really bad things. I'm not here to say that the cops are just randomly arresting the wrong people, although I'm sure they do that as well. But the fact of the matter is that they have abdicated a huge part of their role, which is protect and serve. Okay, they are the only ones of the bunch that are paid to protect and serve. A criminal is not paid to protect and serve. A criminal is a criminal. But we have a justice system to handle them. You need to take care of the people. You need to not beat them senseless. You need to not kill them. You need to not accidentally kill them. You need to take care of them when they're in your custody. You need to get them processed, and you need to get them to their day in court. And what's happening is there's a callous, cavalier attitude. And I see a lot. This is almost split right down the line politically, where if you look, the conservatives are basically saying, he had it coming. Look at his rap sheet. What a bad guy he was. No, you don't understand. You don't understand. Look at all the charges he's had against him. And I say, and? So the heck?
Right.
F what?
It doesn't matter. But that action doesn't allow the cops to be executioners right there on the spot. And does the crime fit the punishment? I mean,
Think about this, right? You have conservatives go absolutely bonkers about Waco, where the government used excessive force getting the Branch Davidians out.
That's true.
You had Ruby Ridge, where the conservatives were hell-bent about that because, guess what? This guy was a gun nutter out there in the middle of nowhere, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have them flocking down there to Bundy Ranch, the guy who said, let me tell you about the Negra, okay? We got them flocking to him with all their guns and pointing guns at BLS officers. They're pointing their weapons at law enforcement, and they are not in jail. These were gun-toting, flag-waving yahoos that got away with doing something that these kids, unarmed, would have gotten shot for. And they're saying, it's all about liberty. And I ask them, why are you not out there front line about the government abuse for Freddie Gray? Why are you not out there about the Yahoo, the gung-ho crap with Trayvon? Why are you not out there for Tamir Rice, who is still 5 months later, no charges filed? A 12-year-old boy has a BB gun, is shot dead. Why are you not out there? Why?
I think we have a call, Steve.
Let's take a break,
and I think we have a call. Let's see who's on the line. Welcome to Let's Chat. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Nikki. I was calling in. I wanted to call earlier, but for some reason, Blog Talk Radio wouldn't let me in online, so I missed
some things never change, right?
Right. I was listening to Steve. I don't know if he remembers me because I shut down my old Facebook page, but he and I had spoken before when I was doing my radio show, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, he may have called in onto my show as well a couple of times, but I wanted to kind of get his thoughts on, because I'll never be white in America. I'm as black as you're ever going to get. But I wanted to know how our allies, when we fight against police brutality, when it has to do with racial bias, I wanted to know how an ally, an activist such as himself, deal with other white people who may say, well, it has nothing to do with race. And I always ask the question, well, how come the fool who shot up the movie theater and the the school, how come they were able to be brought in alive? One of them killed himself, but I think the one who shot up the movie theater, he was taken, mm-hmm. He was taken in alive. There was a
He was totally batshit crazy, too.
Right. And there was an older white gentleman in California who actually was in a park pointing a gun at police officers, and he was still brought in alive. How come when it's our children, when it's black men, black women as well, black children, we don't get the same trip to the police station? And if we do, we die between the scene of the crime and on our way to the police station. So what do you say to those other liberals, or not so liberals, the Republicans and everybody else who always say, well, it's not about race?
Great question. Steve?
I spend most of my time debunking myths and lies. So one of the things that is difficult is that there is a statistical perpetuation that, honestly, more whites are killed by police officers in a given year. However, like 11% of the population is black, and yet mm-hmm. the statistics are staggeringly close. So the percentage is outrageous, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is you got to make sure you're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. And they typically will use metrics that try and say, see, look at this. The reality is that there is a systemic racist problem in this country. It is not like it used to be in the sense that you have people just overtly, kicking people or denying them service, although I think Republicans in the Midwest are still trying to deny people service. But you do have a tremendous amount of deflection. There's a lot of people that simply can't accept it. I have people that I actually know and love tell me there's not racism in the world because, look, we have a black president. I have people that I know and love and I love them to death, but my goodness, could it be any less true? I have people that will sit there and tell me they don't want to hear it because there are people that use their blackness as an excuse to get away with things, and you say it's racist. So the problem is that you take outliers – and you make them the front point. You realize these Baltimore riots weren't riots at first. There was 2 weeks of peaceful protests. 2 weeks
right.
of peaceful protests that were not covered by anyone. Nobody gave two craps about. They finally cared when people went and said, you know what, screw this, I'm going nuts. Now, I am not condoning violence. I'm not condoning some of the buffoonery that some of these people did. But I liken it to this. And I try and explain this to people. When you take a 2-year-old child and they're trying to tell you what's wrong in their world and they can't express it or you're not hearing them, they get frustrated. They stomp their feet. They do whatever they can to get your attention, negative attention, good attention. It doesn't matter. They want your attention. They want you to understand them. When you have poor people in general, okay, poor people in general, they're not being heard. They're dismissed. They're just outright dismissed. So what happens is people get frustrated, and they do things that they probably wouldn't do otherwise. But people are not listening. So they ratchet it up and ratchet it up. And finally, when they get so frustrated that you're not hearing them, they erupt. So what I tell people, especially the wing nuts, the right wingers, that deny racism, that they always come back to Al Sharpton. They always come back to some red herring, some bullshit,
mm-hmm.
some stupid
mm-hmm.
comment. So stupid it's barely worth talking through. But you know that if you don't talk through it, you'll never get anywhere. The problem is not within the people that are enlightened. The problem is in these dipshits that bring up Al Sharpton. Okay?
Right.
So the only way that you're ever going to do that is to take a step back. You can do one of two things. You can shame the living hell out of them, which they deserve. Or you can take a step back and try the path of bridging. There is a group that I'm in also on Facebook called Bridge the Divide. It's a very, very good group. One of the things that they do is they focus on understanding one another as opposed to winning a debate. They focus on understanding why you believe what you believe, what you're saying and why you're saying it, and what other people believe. Now, for me, that's a little difficult as an activist. I like to be able to punch you in the gut and there's not as much punching that goes on there. So that's why you come to Grumbine's Political Mosh Pit, so you can get your game on. But over there, there's some things to learn. You know, it's understanding where they're coming from. And there is fear. To Carlette's point earlier, these people are afraid of a changing world. They're afraid of homosexuals getting married. Oh, my God. They sit there and envision gay sex when they think about whether it should be legal or not. And they gross themselves out. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't do this. It's like, nobody's asking you to have gay sex. Just let them get married. Leave them alone. Nobody's asking you to wear your pants on the ground. Nobody's asking you to buy into hip-hop culture. They're just asking you not to judge them for it. Okay? Nobody's asking you to – you see, people try and put it on, and they think to themselves, what if I did that? What if I talk like that? What if I look like – what if I dress like that? And they always white-splain it. They always white-splain it.
That's a nice term.
Everything is white-splained. It's always done through the perspective of white. And this is what happens when you're a majority in the country. You can always view it through your lens. You never have to step outside yourself. You go outside this country, people around the world laugh at us. We are a bunch of Yahoo cowboys, backwoods hicks, okay? And we live in our small little worlds. And so what I end up doing is I try to explain to people. I try and produce quality articles from publications like The Atlantic. There's an author named Coates that writes in there, one of the best writers you will ever read on race relations. I post from Mother Jones, which is a left-leaning publication, but they actually do investigative journalism, and they actually provide quality backup sourcing to the points they're making. The thing is that you always have to seek truth. You know, I don't think it's good to always rush with the mob mentality, because there is a lot of built-up anger. There's a lot of rage in there that will make you jump to conclusions that maybe this particular instance will hurt the cause by jumping to a conclusion. So you really need to
I want you to stop right there. Steve, I want you to stop right there. Nikki, I'm going to leave you on. I have another caller I want to bring in. We've got about 15 minutes left. You're listening to Let's Chat with Carlette Norwood. My guest tonight is Steve Grumbine, an activist. And we're talking about police brutality, social issues. I mean, we're talking about a whole lot of stuff. But we're basically talking about what's going on in Baltimore, the powder keg, the country, and civil unrest, pretty much, seems like where we're headed. So we're talking about that. If you want to call in, we've got a few minutes left. The number is 347-215-7302. Area code 240, welcome to Let's Chat.
How's everybody doing?
Hey, great. That sounds like Keon Reed.
You already know what it is, Ms. Len. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in. Did you have a question?
Yeah, man. I've been listening to the show, but I've been able to catch the past 20-25 minutes of the show, and I love this subject, and it actually kind of hits home to me, because I actually, too, have a family member, a cousin, who was murdered by the police when I was in the eighth grade. He was shot through his windshield while he was sleeping in his car by an officer. You feel me?
Wow.
He was killed by police while he was sleeping in his car.
And what was their reasoning for shooting him? What on earth did they say he was doing?
You gotta ask that cop. I till this day do not know.
Really? Did they bring charges against the officer?
I'm not sure, but I think he was acquitted, to be honest. He was acquitted.
Okay, so just so the listening audience knows, a lot of you who are regular listeners to the show know Keon, K. Quick Reed. He was one of my students. That's how we met in my sociology class. And every now and then there's that chemistry that works. And we've remained friends outside of the classroom. And he's in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area with me. We both live in Southern Maryland. So did that happen here in Maryland, or was that somewhere else?
It happened in Maryland. It happened in La Plata, Maryland. It happened in La Plata, Maryland.
And what year was that?
2006.
Wow.
I think I just turned 14 when it happened. Johnny Lyles. Rest in peace to my cousin Johnny Lyles. I mean, it's just like me being a black man. As humans, it's to the point where the ones that are supposed to protect and serve, we don't feel protected when we're around them at all.
Right.
I mean, like even when I'm driving and I see a car and a police cruiser in front of me, let alone behind me, I get edgy. I get a twitch. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I feel uncomfortable when they're beside me, around me, or whatnot, and when I, and the, God forbid I get pulled over, because it's at the, because obviously there's a trend going on where like the first move by them is to draw and shoot. I mean, they have billy clubs, they have taser guns, they have all these this so called training to apprehend or stun or put somebody in a position where they can't do that.
There used to be issues of reasonable force, first of all, and you know, and then their lives had to be threatened in some kind of way for them to use deadly force. And
exactly.
So, Keon, I'm going to put you back on hold because we've got about 10 minutes, and I want to go ahead and wrap up with Steve. But thank you for calling in and sharing your story. And
no
you know,
problem.
I'm really sorry that that happened to you and your family. And you and I
thank
will be
you,
talking.
Thank
I'll
you.
See you around. Okay, I'm going to put you back
thank
on hold.
You, thank
okay?
you. Glad.
Can I say one thing and then Steve can close it out like you said? I just wanted to, I don't think people understand, like, most of the time when I'm arguing or debating with someone, they're like, you just don't like the white cops. Why don't you like just like the black cops? I want to make it known. I don't like any cop. I don't trust
That's
any
right.
cop. I don't care if they're black, white, Asian, purple, pink. I don't care. I just don't trust any cop. And my experiences with the police have always gone this way. And I hope I don't, you know, I hope I don't piss off any of my activist friends when I say this. I've had better experiences with white police officers than I've had with black police officers. And I say that, I want you to understand the context I'm saying it in. Black officers always feel like they have something to prove. So whereas I got caught on a roadblock once before I had my driver's license, I was pregnant, and the white police officer said, well, we're going to let you go with a warrant. I'm going to follow you back to the house to make sure you park the car and don't get back in. The black officer wanted him to actually lock me up or give me a ticket because I didn't have my license. And I was only going like maybe a mile to the store to get my child some milk. I've had another instance with black police officers where I got pulled over. We were in the car. We don't know what we're being pulled over for, but we know we got rifles aimed at us, and all of those cops were black. So I don't discriminate for my dislike of cops, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. I think they just think we don't like the white cops, but it's not just the white cops. It's
That's
all
right.
cops.
Okay, well, thanks, Nikki. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay? Thank you for calling
Thank
in.
Thank you very much.
We're going to address what she said because I just want to add something on to that. To me, there's nothing worse than what's happening to black men and black women and to know that black officers were on the scene when it happened. We saw that with the man who was shot in the back 8 times, and we now see that with Freddie Gray. There are black officers involved, and we need to make that and we need to make that part of our debate points, because at some point it has become not a race issue in a lot of cases, but a police issue. And I don't
That's
want
right.
to diminish the race part of it, but I do want to emphasize that these are rogue cops, period. And there's nothing worse, like she said, there to me is nothing worse than a black cop that sees the blue line before he sees another black male. Because if he wasn't wearing that badge and gun, guess what? He would be in that same position. And oftentimes when they're off duty, not in uniform, they find themselves in the same position. But they'd rather the fraternity becomes more important than the brotherhood, so to speak. So I'm going to let you have about 3 minutes, and you can wrap us up, and then I'll have the final word.
All right. So what I'm most concerned with leaving folks with is the fact that the conservative part of me that goes back years says that rights, the Constitution, are not just for good people. They're for bad people, too. You don't have just rights for good people. Rights are there for all of us, and they're there especially for people that we consider bad. Okay? So when we go through and we look at the way that police culture is, you're right in stating that she made a very valid point. You see that the cops that took their that hurt Freddie Gray, however that happened, Okay, whether it was a stone on the ground or whether it was a bolt in the van, whether it was not tying, whatever it was, the disregard for his life happened from both a white perspective and a black perspective. It was a police perspective. It was a police fraternity not giving a crap about someone in their chain of custody. They didn't care because that is the culture right now. And it's not for all. Let's state this clearly because somebody will come back to me later and say, you said all. No, absolutely not. I believe the vast majority of police officers are good people. They want to do a good job. They care about the job they do and so forth. I do believe that there is a culture of the blue wall of silence, and these people need to be held accountable. That needs to be shattered. It needs to be more important that you uphold the law and you do it good, and that you provide the rights to everybody that are supposed to be protected by the Constitution. That should be the driving force in a police officer's mind, not protecting their brothers in the police blue. And when you look at you've got a classism problem, okay? Poor people in general are getting abused and used by the cops. It's damn expensive to be poor. All the fines, that's another show we need to do. But the bottom line right now, right here, right now, we have a very serious issue in this country, and it is truly a lack of opportunity. People are desperate. People are not seeing advancement. There are not companies that are starting people out on the bottom up anymore and growing you. You've got to have a ton of skills to get started, or you're not getting a good job. People are flat out desperate. They're doing whatever they can to survive. Guess what? It's personal responsibility. They're doing whatever they can, and if that means breaking the law, they're doing it. I don't condone that, but I condone survival. So where do you draw the line? We've got to make a change, and the only way we're going to make that change, in my opinion, is to get rid of the fascists. We need to bring in someone like Bernie Sanders. I'm not a big Hillary supporter, but she would be 1,000 times better than anyone on the right. But I tell you what, I really believe in Bernie Sanders. There's my plug. For anybody that's listening, I got it in there. Bernie Sanders for president 2016, okay? Anyway, there's my closing line.
Well, Steve, I really want to thank you for coming in. You and I could, really talk for a really long time because there's so many issues to talk about. And I know that you're coming back. We haven't confirmed the date yet, but I know you're coming back. We initially were going to talk about the food stamp program and how right-wingers want to tell us what to buy with food stamps. They're saying that people should be able to buy steak and seafood on food stamps, and the misnomer that your tax dollars pay for food stamps, that your tax dollars fund the food stamp program. We're here to tell you that's a lie. You don't pay taxes that go toward the food stamp program. So we're going to talk about that. We put that on hold so we could talk about Baltimore and the police state, but Steve will be back soon. I'm going to make it be soon, and we're going to talk about the food stamp program. So make sure you go to letschat.com, L-E-T-T-E-S, chat, or follow me on Facebook so you can find all the show dates of when Steve will be coming back. Also, let's see. Oh, I want to say again that we are now with the Carmen Online Radio Network, and Nikki Michelle, who just called in a little bit earlier, she launches her show on tomorrow night, which is May 7th, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And she's doing an open forum. And then on Friday, Sherry Andrea, who's also with the network, is doing readings. She's doing free psychic readings, y'all. Free psychic readings. Make sure you come back on Friday at 8 o'clock to see Sherry. Be looking out for show links and all of that for updated information. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It's my first time out the gate in about 4 months, so I'm a little rusty. I'll be back in the swing celebrating the third year of Let's Chat. So glad. I mean, wow, what a ride it's been, 3 years. Again, I want to thank this show's sponsor, Bleeding Critic. You can follow him at bleedingcritic.com. And, of course, the gorgeous, the illustrious, the dynamically handsome and talented Paul Sampson. Paul Sampson Films and Knight of the Templar. In case you have not seen Knight of the Templar, please go to Knight, that's N-I-G-H-T, of the Templar, T-E-M-P-L-A-R.com, and order your copy today. Stars Paul Sampson, Norman Reedus of The Walking Dead, Billy Drago, Udo Kier, and, of course, the late, great David Carradine. That's it for me. I will be back with you tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Nikki Michelle follows me at 10. We'll see you back here right to on Block Talk Radio. So, Steve, you hold on a second. Say goodnight to everybody. Say goodbye.
Bye-bye, everybody. Grumbine's Political Mosh Pit on Facebook, folks. Grumbine's Political Mosh Pit.
All right. Good night, y'all. Have a good night. Yeah, it is. So I do want to revisit that food stamp program. Oops. Yeah, I do want to revisit that food stamp program, though, that show. Steve?